Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the December NJEDA Telephonic Board Meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Of course, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Munir, if we could do a roll call, please. Munira?
This is Danielle. I'll jump in here.
I'm here.
Good morning.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Chairman Kevin Quinn?
Here. Good to have you, Munira.
All righty. Vice Chairman Charles Farlow? No. Noreen Giblin from the Governor's Office?
Here.
Commissioner Marlene Caridi from Department of Banking?
Present.
Jennifer Keys Maloney for State Treasurer Moyo.
Here.
Roberto Sabarenas for Commissioner Angelo from Department of Labor.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Here.
Phil Elagia. No. Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Marcia Marley?
Here.
Robert Shimko?
Here.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Munira. Yep. Folks, we have a very busy agenda this morning. We have the prior month's minutes to approve from the November 10th, 2021 regular meeting minutes. I'd ask you when making a motion or seconding to please state your last name, and let's try to move this along, please. Can I get a motion to approve the November 10th regular meeting minutes?
Fred Dumont makes the motion.
Thank you, Fred. Caridi.
Jenny Bauer.
Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Abstained. Not there.
Thank you. I appreciate the enthusiasm on making motions and seconding today. Thank you. I have some brief remarks to make here. To date, the NJEDA's COVID programs have provided almost $670 million of support to businesses in New Jersey. The Sustain and Serve program has funded over 1.8 million meals and continues to support restaurants and fight food insecurity in cities all over New Jersey. This program has received recent press recognition for this innovative program, including an article in the New York Times and coverage on Philadelphia and New York television stations. We are continuing to advance new programs created by the Economic Recovery Act. We've launched the expanded NJ ZIP program last week, expanding that down to the Greater Shore area. Now businesses there can apply for assistance to purchases of medium to heavy duty electric vehicles to help support a cleaner environment. We've taken two major steps towards securing New Jersey's leadership in the global offshore wind arena. Governor Murphy announced $700 million in federal and state funds to stimulate economic growth and improve public health in the state, which importantly includes an additional $265 million in funding for the New Jersey Wind Port. Secondly, we've launched applications now for the new offshore wind tax credit. The EDA continues to partner with and listen to businesses and local leaders, industry experts, and the legislature to advance the state's economic recovery and build resilience. We remain laser-focused on advancing programs that create good jobs, build vibrant communities, and create economic resilience. We're entering 2022 with wind in our sails, and I want to wish everybody on the board and staff happy holidays. Tim, turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, everyone. I'll be brief as well, given the volume of stuff we've got on the docket for today. I think the chairman said it well. There's a ton going on kind of inside the walls of our various offices here at the EDA. The ZIP program, which importantly has had more than 50% participation by minority-owned businesses and about 30-35% participation by women-owned businesses in the initial phases of those programs, has been expanded to now servicing Greater Camden, Greater Newark, Greater New Brunswick, and the Greater Shore, which goes all the way from Cape May up to Ocean County, with a view to hopefully expanding that statewide probably sometime in the early to middle part of next year. A really extraordinary, I think, example of how we endeavor to pilot programs, learn from them, scale them, and if they work, or not scale them if they don't work. And this is a good example of one that's going well. So a great example there. Again, the wind momentum continues to be incredibly strong, as the chairman mentioned. Deeply grateful to Governor Murphy and legislative leadership and the members of the Joint Budget Oversight Committee for approving the $265 million of additional funding for the wind port down in Salem County. Brian and I were together with a group of Southern New Jersey County Commissioners, I think it was last Monday, for a dinner down in Salem County, talking about the project, and just extraordinary enthusiasm and support from everyone in the room who understood, or I think, I don't speak for them, but I think understands the extraordinary job and economic impact that the clean energy and the offshore wind revolution can mean for South Jersey. The offshore wind tax credit is a big part of that picture, both supporting things in Paulsboro, supporting things in Paulsboro and in Salem County and all across the state as we look to really maximize the onshore jobs impact of offshore wind. The other thing I'll mention real quick is on continuing sort of on the green theme, particularly sort of in the wake of Ida, which comes many years in the wake of Sandy, the notion of smart growth and thinking smartly and strategically about where we want to develop and redevelop properties to be resilient and respectful, or to be cognizant of the reality of climate change. Cleaning up our brownfields and redeveloping them is a really important part of that. Brownfields are usually located in places that have already, again, they're previously developed. They have infrastructure. They've got power. They've got usually water and sewer, all those kinds of good things because they were legacy industrial properties. And we launched a program funded by U.S. EPA funding to support cities and towns to take a run at cleaning up and remediating some of their brownfields. Just one of many things that we do within the EDA in great partnership with Commissioner LaTourette and the team at DEP, who are extraordinary partners in lots of things, but particularly in brownfield remediation. So eager to get that, or excited that we have that up and running and that applications are now live for that. So a really important opportunity there. With that, I'll just echo the chairman's deep appreciation. I think this is the 14th board meeting we've had this year, barring something strange. It'll be the last board meeting we have in calendar 21. The amount of time and energy and effort that the board members bring, not just to these meetings, but the committee meetings and reviewing the copious materials, including several hundred pages of materials for today. I couldn't be more appreciative of the time, the engagement, the quality of feedback and oversight that that the board provides and partnership and support for everything we're trying to do. Deeply appreciate that. And so I'll just I'll yield the floor and wish everyone a happy holiday season and a happy new year, and looking forward to a good set of discussions today on a pretty good, robust set of items to power up into the new year. Mr. Chairman, floor back to you.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Let me begin with just highlights from the Policy and Audit Committee. Those items will follow shortly hereafter. From the Policy Committee, we focused on three items: the award of Phase 1 government-restricted municipality planning grants, the creation of a New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge to make grant funding available for an arts and innovation festival in New Jersey, And lastly, support for the expansion of Gloucester County Institute of Technology's welding and painting programs to prepare students for niche careers in manufacturing. I applaud all three of these mission-driven initiatives as they will help to create specialized career opportunities and support local economic revitalization efforts. From the Audit Committee, I'm pleased to see the 2020 Comprehensive Annual Report and the 2022 Fiscal Plan moving forward. Collectively, these reports represent the EDA's robust accomplishments navigating the COVID-19 pandemic and awarding funding to small businesses in need, as well as a vision for the future of how the NJEDA can continue to support economic growth and help small businesses grow and thrive in the Garden State. Thank you to the staff for all your hard work in bringing these reports to the board. So let's move on with our agenda. Authority matters. Recommendation for grant awards, Phase 1 Government Restricted Municipality Planning Grants Program. John Costello, Program Manager, Policy and Data Analytics, presenting. John.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I come before the board today to request the approval of Phase 1 Government Restricted Municipality Planning Grants of $250,000 each to the City of Atlantic City for Atlantic City, the City of Trenton for Trenton, and the City of Patterson for Patterson. This grant will develop comprehensive strategic plans that will identify technical planning gaps and planned but unrealized projects with great potential for sustained community-focused economic development from the library plans created by both the municipality, business partners, and community stakeholders. These Phase 1 grants and its following plan will set the stage for projected implementation in Phase 2, which will provide funding to close the technical gaps and bring about sustained community-focused projects to the market. The strategic action plans, which we'll fund today, will embrace three major points: the analysis of municipal, business partner, and community stakeholder plans, the identification in those plans of catalytic community-focused projects, and finally, a project review for technical planning gaps that have held these projects back from realization. The authority launched this process in July of 2021 with application submissions. They were submitted on a rolling basis, and we received three applications by the stated deadline from the City of Atlantic City, the City of Patterson, and the City of Trenton. An evaluation committee evaluated the plans and presented three to the board for award. Those three being presented for awards are the City of Atlantic City. Through its planning department, Atlantic City will leverage a rapid but thorough nationwide contract bid for a major planning and analysis partner. The dual focus of Atlantic City's plan will look at the gaps that exist in current project development partners, as well as identifying solutions that increase the flow of outside capital. The City of Patterson, utilizing a city-led integrated special project team, will focus their planning efforts on projects that are community-based but lack planning and research to move to market. The city will also look at the needs of redevelopment areas, the need for citywide redevelopment plans, and their impact on municipal and stakeholder projects. The City of Trenton will work with two core partners, Greater Trenton and New Jersey Future, who will conduct an in-depth planning assessment of economic opportunities based on city assets and market conditions. The plan will report and examine the goals and measures for the city's progress to implementing its master plan in order to determine the city's ability to act strategically and take on a long-term planning approach. To summarize, in recommendation, the members are requested to approve the Phase 1 Government Restricted Municipality Planning Grants of $250,000 each to the City of Atlantic City, the City of Trenton, and the City of Patterson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm open for any questions.
Folks, any questions for John? If we have no questions for John, can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer. I got you. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Continuing to the next item, New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant. We're going to continue with John Costello presenting. John.
Mr. Chair, thank you again. The board today is asked to approve four actions as part of the New Jersey Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant. Number one, to transfer $2 million of funds to the Economic Recovery Fund. Number two, to adopt for the Economic Recovery Fund the economic development priorities laid out by Governor Murphy's 2018 economic plan. Three, to approve the creation of the Arts and Innovation Challenge Grant, which will be Kickstarter capital for an innovative festival designed to attract top-tier talent in arts and innovation sectors to our state. And four, to delegate to authority staff the ability to accept up to $5 million in funding from other government sources or from unrestricted gifts. The reason, in line with Governor Murphy's goal to build a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy, the grant will support an entity's work to produce an event that will showcase cutting-edge work in arts, technology, education, policy, and social impact. The festival will be based in New Jersey. It will position New Jersey as both a premier live-work-play location for top talent and firms in arts and innovation, and act as a driver for innovation-focused tourism to our state. The process behind this. We want to leverage the Economic Recovery Funds, specifically new language in subsection 13 that allows for the creation of challenge grants for board-identified economic development priorities. We ask today for the board to define these priorities for Section 13 of the Economic Recovery Fund as the same as those outlined by Governor Murphy's 2018 economic plan. They are investing in people, investing in communities, making New Jersey a state of innovation, and making government work better. Our priority focus will be for the Arts and Innovation Festival will be on two priorities, the investment in communities and making New Jersey the state of innovation. The background on the grant. The grant will support planning and operations of an Arts and Innovation Festival. The $2 million in funding will be used to kickstart this festival, and it will be used for booking and operational costs. The festival will be held in New Jersey municipalities over at least a two-day period. It will include arts such as performances, music, and poetry, innovation such as technical demos, discussion panels, and thought leaders as keynote speakers. The goal is to hold this festival sometime in the summer or fall of 2022. The uses. This fund can only be used for a New Jersey festival. We will make sure that there will be significant controls on the funding for this festival, both to ensure our fiduciary responsibility and also to move forward the goal of a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy. The applicants will be asked to include as part of their application multiple pieces of information, including a detailed list of past events, which will help us measure to the experience the applicants' management and production of large-scale events. They'll be asked to include a fundraising plan to show their ability to raise additional revenue for the festival. They'll ask to include diversity plans, transit plans, security plans, COVID plans as well. They'll be asked to include a budget, and most importantly, a vision statement. This vision statement will detail three core points behind the festival. A, their concept behind the festival. B, how the festival will promote New Jersey as a premier location for top-tier talent and firms to live, work, and play. And three, how the festival will act as a driver for the arts and innovation-focused tourism to our state. Applications will be reviewed by authority staff with expert advice from across multiple state agencies, such as Council for the Arts and Office of Innovation. Awards will be made to the board after staff recommendation, and disbursements will have tight controls, including spending plans, cost reporting, and fundraising plan reports updated based on the impact of the major acts and vendors. The eligibility for this grant. This grant will be open to four nonprofit businesses. Applicants must have either a valid New Jersey business registration or a valid New Jersey nonprofit registration. They must have demonstrated experience in organizing and executing at least one event since 2014 with a minimum attendance of 5,000. There will be one application per applicant. Applicants can include strategic partners who will collaborate with the applicant on the planning and production of the festival. Strategic partner-produced events can count towards scoring. However, these partnerships must be recognized with an MOU prior to application and be included as part of the application. The application packet itself must provide proof of events. It must detail events being held over 2 days with three or more elements such as live music and performance, panel discussions, keynote speakers, live technical demonstrations and trade shows. Again, they must have a detailed vision statement outlining the concepts, how the festival will put New Jersey as a premier live-work-play destination for top talent and firms in arts and innovation, and how it will promote New Jersey as a destination for arts and innovation tourism. It must also include a residential equity plan detailing how the host community will be able to participate with free or reduced price tickets. Again, they will have to have COVID, transit, diversity, and security plans, as well as a fundraising plan detailing how they will grow revenue to fund the festival beyond our initial $2 million allocation. The disbursements. After approval by the board and signing of the grant agreements, disbursements will be done in two tranches. The first tranche will be $500,000, focused on booking artists, speakers, presenters, and venues. This must be accompanied by a spending plan. The second tranche of disbursements will be $1.5 million, mostly focused on operational cost reimbursements around the festival. Again, these disbursements will have strict controls, including updated fundraising plans, detailed disbursement reports, as well as monthly milestone report and check-ins. The scoring for this festival places a heavy emphasis on past experience, with 55 points being given to past experience. Within that 55 points, we have included a preference for New Jersey events, with 10 of those 55 points going for New Jersey events. The vision statement will have 20 points of value to show alignment with the goals and objectives for a stronger and fairer New Jersey. It must have a host community plan of 5 points, showing how the community will be able to participate in the festival will be required, as well as a 10-point fundraising plan, 5 points for COVID security plan, and 5 points for a diversity and inclusion plan. We ask the board, in addition to the above, for delegated authority to accept additional funds from other government sources or unrestricted gifts up to $5 million. And to conclude, all applications will be required to have a fee of $1,000 per application. That concludes my request today, Mr. Chairman. And to summarize, we ask for the $2 million in funds to the Economic Recovery Fund, adopt for the Economic Recovery Fund Governor Murphy's 2018 Economic Plan priorities, approve the creation of the Arts and Innovation Festival Challenge Grant, and to delegate to the authority staff the ability to accept up to $5 million in funding from other government sources or unrestricted gifts.
Great.
Thank you,
John. Do we have any questions for John?
Sorry, this is Danielle Esther. I just wanted to advise that Phil Alagia has joined board member Phil Alagia has joined. He's available for this. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. Do we have any questions for John? If we have no questions for John, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Elizabeth Dragon, second.
Thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, the 2020 Comprehensive EDA Annual Report. Pat Rose, Director of Marketing and Product Development, and Rich Lacasio, Controller, presenting. Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, everyone. This item for the members' approval today is the EDA Comprehensive Annual Report for calendar year 2020. The Authorities Enabling Act requires the EDA to prepare and distribute an annual report of activities undertaken in a calendar year to support economic development in New Jersey. Since 2006, pursuant to Executive Order 37, the annual report is combined with the authority's audited financial statements and serves as the EDA's comprehensive annual report. I will briefly summarize the information in the narrative portion of the report, which I believe was shared with the members via some share file links that you should see in your board package, and then I will turn things over to EDA's controller, Rich Lacasio, to discuss the audited financial statements. The NJEDA annual report is prepared in-house jointly by marketing and communication staff and highlights EDA's work and accomplishments in calendar year 2020. This year's report focuses on EDA support for small businesses with a major focus on the support the authority has provided to New Jersey businesses and nonprofits through COVID-19 relief programs, such as the various phases of the emergency assistance grants as well as emergency assistance loans. The report also includes EDA's accomplishments around growing New Jersey's innovation economy, supporting clean energy initiatives and the authority's work around major offshore wind initiatives, including the New Jersey Wind Port. Additionally, the annual report highlights EDA's project activity in 2020, including non-incentive projects that closed in 2020, incentive projects that were board approved in 2020, and new to this year's report, a list of projects that were supported through the authority's various COVID-19 relief programs in calendar year 2020. The report also includes an incentives issuance report, which highlights new certifications and the actual issuance of tax credits or other incentives in 2020, largely under predecessor incentive programs such as Grow New Jersey, ERG, and the Urban Transit Hub tax credit. Finally, attached as appendices to the report, you'll find several additional programmatic annual reports that are statutorily required of the EDA to produce. Upon the member's approval of the report today, this report will be submitted to the Governor's Authorities Unit, posted to the EDA website, and transmitted electronically to the members of the legislature, which will fulfill the EDA's statutory obligation. At this time, I'll turn things over to Rich LoCascio to discuss the audited financial statements.
Well, thank you, Pat, and thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. As Pat noted, the annual report includes the authority's audited financial statements for the calendar year ending December 31st of 2020. These were prepared by the authority's independent auditor, PKF O'Connor Davies, and in that report, the auditors expressed a clean opinion, or in accounting parlance known as an unmodified opinion. We're very pleased with that. And again, as Pat noted, this fulfills the executive order requirements for a comprehensive annual financial report. In time, we'll get that up on the website and on the internal site, as we've done with prior audit reports. But Chairman, I'll yield back to you if there's anything you want to add to it, other than the audit committee did also review this at its audit committee meeting on November 23rd. And then recommended that up to the full board.
Great, Rich. Thank you. Do we have any questions for Pat or Rich? If we have no questions for Pat or Rich, can I get a motion to approve?
Move, Phil Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer.
Second, Giblin.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the fiscal 2022 fiscal plan. Rich LoCascio presenting. Rich.
All right, thank you, Chairman. So again, this is the 2022 fiscal plan for the EDA, and this plan was reviewed and recommended to the full board at the audit committee's meeting again on November 23rd. The plan is presented in a break-even format or break-even bottom line, meaning that there are sufficient resources anticipated in 2022 to cover operating expenses without relying on prior year earnings. It's an increase, certainly, in revenue and anticipated infusions for all of the different programs and initiatives that the authority has been undertaking and will continue to undertake in the coming year as part of its mission. Again, Chairman, this was recommended to the full board with the audit committee's consent. And I will yield back to you or Tim if there's anything that you wanted to add, and then we would ask for approval of the fiscal plan.
Great. Thank you, Rich. I don't have any additional comments. Tim?
Oh, sorry, this is Danielle. I'll just jump in again. I apologize. Public member, Vice Chairman Charles Arlo has joined as well.
Great. Thank you, Danielle.
Now, the only thing I'd add, Chairman, is both for this and the annual report, you know, the taking it for granted is the wrong word, but we're privileged to have things like a unqualified audit opinion from our auditors year in, year out. And I just want to take a moment to give a shout to Rich and his team and Fred, the team that works on all this stuff, because it's a couple discussion items once a year, but it's an extraordinary amount of work, and it's deeply, deeply important to the integrity of what we do. So shouts and appreciation for Rich and the team.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Any questions for Rich? We have no questions for Rich. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion, so Jennifer Maloney.
Jennifer Maloney, can I get a second?
Second, Phil.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda is the offshore wind painting and submerged arc welding MOU between the NJEDA and Gloucester County Institute of Technology. Jen Becker, Managing Director, Wind Institute Development, presenting. Jen.
Good morning, and thank you, Chairman. Before the board is an MOU between the New Jersey Economic Development Authority and the Gloucester County Institute of Technology, GCIT, a public vocational school in Gloucester County. The MOU would provide up to $75,000 in funding to support GCIT's expansion of its painting and welding programs, utilizing funding from the MOU between EDA and the BPU for Offshore Wind Initiative signed in July 2021. These expanded programs at GCIT will prepare students and workers for jobs in heavy steel offshore wind component manufacturing, including for the approximately 500 jobs anticipated at EEW's offshore wind monopile manufacturing facility located in close proximity to GCIT at the Port of Paulsboro. Offshore wind is a strategic sector for New Jersey, and EDA is supporting the launch of the Wind Institute to accelerate workforce development and innovation in the state. In December 2020, EEW Offshore Structures announced a $250 million investment in a state-of-the-art manufacturing facility at the Port of Paulsboro to build steel components known as monopiles for offshore wind turbines that will serve the entire United States offshore wind industry. Construction on the facility broke ground earlier this year, and hiring of specialized welders and painters will begin by the end of next year. These occupations will be high-quality and permanent job opportunities and will require specialized training to meet skill set needs for offshore monopile welding, known as submerged arc welding, which is submerged under sand, not underwater, and painting. These skill sets would also be required for offshore wind tower manufacturing, an emerging industry in the U.S. offshore wind sector. The training will be critical to ensuring local students and workers are prepared for these opportunities and will prepare for students for jobs in other manufacturing facilities as New Jersey's offshore wind supply chain grows. EEW and GCIT have already made commitments to support the expansion of these programs, including securing donated submerged arc welding equipment from welding product manufacturer Lincoln Electric. Through this MOU, EDA will provide additional financial support to help GCIT secure specialized painting equipment and related materials for both painting and welding, market and promote these new programs, as well as fund instructor time for additional evening or weekend classes that will train adults in welding and painting. As part of the MOU, GCIT will provide EDA with detailed plans and budget for the expansion of these programs, including their strategies to achieve positive enrollment and employment outcomes. The MOU has a term of 18 months with an option for a one-year extension. The request to the board today is to approve the MOU and provide delegated authority to the CEO for the one-year extension if needed. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Jen? If we have no questions for Jen, can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Giblin, second.
Thank you, Nancy. Noreen, excuse me. any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, moving to the next item on our agenda, FNA Enterprise Employee Leasing Incorporated, a request for suspension. Monica Kostreva, Director, Legal Affairs, presenting. Monica.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman. Staff is requesting approval from the members of the board to suspend FNA Enterprise Employee Leasing, Inc., and its owner, Fasia Ibrahim, from contracting with the NJEDA in accordance with Executive Order 34 and other applicable laws. FNA Enterprise Employee Leasing applied to the authority's microbusiness loan program on August 12, 2020, requesting a loan of $50,000. A legal review was conducted, and it was found that on October 7, 2020, the Newark Municipal Court served a criminal complaint on applicant owners Fasia Ibrahim and a related company, FNA Transportation, Inc., with various allegations related to making material misrepresentations, tampering with public records, and conspiring to defraud the governmental entities. The municipal complaint was transferred to the county prosecutor's office on January 4, 2021, and on August 31, 2021, the grand jury issued an indictment against FNA Transportation, Inc. and its owners, including Fasia Ibrahim. These charges stem from an investigation by the Office of Public Integrity and Accountability and the New Jersey State Police Official Corruption Bureau. Pursuant to paragraph 8B of Executive Order 34, a decision to suspend shall be made at the discretion of the executive head of the department and of the attorney general and shall be rendered in the best interest of the state. EO 34 also permits affiliates to be included in a suspension. In determining whether a suspension is proper, the decision must be based upon evidence adequate to create a reasonable suspicion that cause exists. According to paragraph 8E of the executive order, reasonable suspicion may be established by grand jury indictment. If proven, these crimes would justify disqualification of the applicant and its owner from doing business with the NJEDA. The NJEDA is legally entitled to demand that applicants for financial assistance demonstrate and maintain the highest standards of responsibility and moral integrity. If approved, the suspension will last until the investigation and related legal proceedings are completed. Once the suspension expires, staff will determine whether disqualification is appropriate based on the outcome of the criminal investigation and proceeding. Based on the above, we are asking the members of the board to approve the suspension of FNA Enterprise Employee Leasing, Inc. and its owner, Fasia Ibrahim, from contracting with the NJEDA pending the completion of the Attorney General's investigation and related legal proceedings in accordance with Executive Order 34 and other applicable law.
Do we have any questions for Monica? If there's no questions for Monica, can I get a motion to approve?
Fred Dumont, motion.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second?
Robert Shimko.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda, New Jersey Windport, request for Moffitt and Nickel contract increase. Jonathan Kennedy, Managing Director, Infrastructure Economic Growth, presenting. Jonathan.
Good morning. Members are asked to approve up to a $2.495 million increase to the authority's existing contract with Moffitt and Nickel for design and engineering services in relation to the New Jersey Windport. This increase comprises two parts. Firstly, a $495,000 package of scope and price change orders comprising design modifications for Parcel A and Phase 1 engineering support. Secondly, it includes a $2 million initial budget to progress Phase 1 design completion and Phase 2 concept development and early stage design. Staff are also seeking delegated authority to approve or modify change orders within the total approval amount as project needs dictate. We intend to return to the board in 2022 for additional design funding, with this initial budget enabling staff to proceed with Phase 1 design while a holistic budget is being developed. Approval of this request will increase total funding for M&M's contract since its assignment to the authority to $11.21 million. Staff will draw on state funding to cover costs incurred under M&M's contract. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Jonathan? If there's no questions for Jonathan, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Jennifer. Giblin, second. Maloney.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Elizabeth Dragon abstaining due to department involvement.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. We're now moving on to the incentives portion of our agenda. Ginny, would you like to offer a few words in advance of your items before the board today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I will make it quick because we, too, have an extensive amount of projects to discuss under incentives, which we met on November 23rd. We have a tax credit for Hamilton Square that we're proposing, rule amendments for the NOL program, as well as the eMERGE program, a project under GROW, as well as a number of film and digital tax credits. So without further ado, I'll pass back to you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. So our first item on the agenda is the Hamilton Square Urban Renewal LLC and Soldier On Veterans Village 7 LLC Economic Redevelopment and Growth Grant Program. Michael Conti, Senior Real Estate and Credit Underwriter presenting. Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Recommended for approval is a $6.3 million tax credit, which represents 37.57% of the eligible costs for this residential project located in Patterson. There are two co-applicants, the first being Hamilton Square Urban Renewal, which is affiliated with Wynn Development Company, one of the nation's largest affordable housing developers with over $2.5 billion in assets, and they have developed three prior projects using EDA incentives. And the second co-applicant is Soldier On Veterans Village 7, which is a subsidiary of Soldier On, the nation's leading service provider assisting veterans with housing alternatives. The cost of the project is $19 million. It consists of the purchase of land and buildings, rehabilitation, soft costs, and other fees. The project will create 68 affordable 1, 2, and 3-bedroom apartments with parking located at 20 and 21 Mill Street in the Great Falls Historic District of this Garden State Growth Zone city. Presently, 71% of the units are occupied. Tenants will not be displaced during the renovation, which is expected to be completed within 12 months. Financing for the project includes NJHMFA conduit bond financing, which is slated for their board approval on December 16th. The permanent financing consists of a HUD FHA insured mortgage underwritten by Lument Capital, with Fallbrook Tax Credit as the placement agent for the ERG tax credit sold to investors and monetized via a bridge loan from New Jersey Community Capital. The project is also working with the City of Patterson for up to $1.5 million in home funds, as well as seeking up to $500,000 in historic tax credits. Equity will represent 39% of the project costs, and that is comprised of the $1.7 million developer fee, along with $7 million in funds generated from low-income housing tax credits as syndicated by Boston Financial. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Any questions for Michael? If we have no questions for Michael, can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Phil Elijah, second.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda is the proposed rule amendments, the eMERGE program. Matthew Abraham, Director, Tax Credit Programs, presenting. Matthew.
Good morning, Chairman and board members, and happy holiday season. I'll be presenting the proposed rule amendments to the eMERGE program based on the July 2021 amended law. As a result, staff will be requesting the board's approval on proposed amendments to the eMERGE rules to implement certain policy and statutory revisions pursuant to the recent enacted PL 2021-C-160. The approval will authorize staff to submit the proposed program rules as final adopted rules for publication in the New Jersey Register for if no comments are received, subject to final review and approval of the offices of the Attorney General and the Administrative Law. In addition, staff is also proposing a revised fee structure for mega projects. Many of the changes in the amendment, the modifications and statutory revisions that are listed in Appendix A are examples of expanded capital investment to include landlord contributions incurred on behalf of the business. Also, the definition of enhanced and incentive areas were revised to expand the incentive eligible location. The definition of child care facility was also modified to include registered family child care homes, and providing that the term includes facility that maintained a licensed capacity for children aged 13 years or younger who attend for less than 24 hours a day. Also, the definition of statewide workforce was revised to now state that the eligible position has to be in the state rather than at the qualified business facility. This allows more flexibility for New Jersey employees. Furthermore, the new amendments revised and lowered the retained full-time job requirements when a business is also creating new jobs. Lastly, we are proposing to add fees to projects that are designated as a mega project due to the extra level of due diligence that is required at the initial application review, as well as each year of compliance check during the commitment period. Lastly, in accordance to EO 63, these rules are made public on our transparency website to allow the public and stakeholders to review it for comment. Thank you, Chairman, and I'm open for any questions.
Do we have any questions for Matthew? If there's no questions for Matthew,
Chairman,
can I get – yes.
Sorry, Chairman, this is Brian Sabina. I just wanted to make it very clear to all the members that aside from the fee change, which we took into account after our experience the last several approvals, all of the things that Matthew described in his presentation were required by the statute. So it's not like we were exerting additional policy decisions there. That was all implementing statutory decisions.
Great. Thank you, Brian. If there's no questions for Matthew, can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the next item on the agenda, proposed rule amendments, technology business tax certificate transfer program. This is the NOL program. Clark Smith, Director of Innovation Programs, presenting. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, everyone. The memo before you is for proposed amendments to the rules for the Technology Business Tax Certificate Transfer Program, which is more commonly known as the NOL program. It's an annual program with a June 30th deadline. Most recently, the 2021 program was presented to and approved by this board in October. With the NOL program, qualified technology and life science companies apply to sell a benefit based on a percentage of their accrued losses. Throughout the program's history, over $1 billion in benefits have been approved to over 570 New Jersey companies. NOL is a legislatively driven program, so the first set of amendments are associated with legislative updates. To start, there are two benefit increases. For companies, the maximum lifetime benefit amount will increase from $15 million to $20 million. And for the program itself, the annual program benefit pool increases from $60 million to $75 million. I would note these two were in effect for the most recent 2021 program year. The next update affects how we allocate benefits for the annual pool. The program has an annual cap, which previously noted is being raised to $75 million. If we receive benefit requests that exceed that $75 million cap, approved companies will be allowed to sell a portion of their approved benefit amount, and this portion is determined by an allocation formula. Currently, in the first steps of this formula, $10 million goes to companies located in innovation zones. With the update, the first steps of the distribution would increase this amount to $15 million. And it would also expand to include companies which are located in opportunity zones, as well as companies that are certified as either women or minority owned. And then the final update would institute a new program fee structure. So currently, each application requires a $2,500 application fee, and there are no other fees associated with the program. Under the new proposed structure, the application fee would be lowered to $1,000, and there would be an implementation of an approval fee on benefit awards starting at 100K and up. This fee would be charged when the benefits are closed. It would be equal to 1% of the approved benefit amount. It would be the application fee would get credited towards the approval fee, and the max approval fee would be $20,000. Under this new structure, it would lower the financial hurdle to encourage more participation from smaller companies. It also better aligns fees with staff resources. So this concludes my comments, and happy to field any questions at this time.
Do we have any questions for Clark? If we have no questions for Clark, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Jennifer.
Second. Jennifer, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Moving to the next item, WebEmax LLC, a Grow New Jersey Assistance Program, COVID-related termination. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentives Relationship Management. Susan.
Yes, sir. Good morning. So as the chairman said, this is a request to approve WebEmax's termination of its Grow Incentive Agreement pursuant to a COVID-related relief provisions in the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. WebEmax is a service-based digital marketing company providing clients with reputation management and online marketing solutions. In December of 2013, the members approved a $12.8 million 10-year GROW award to incent the creation of 100 new jobs and the retention of 50 employees at an existing 9,000-square-foot office as its QBF, or Qualified Business Facility, in Camden. In November of 2014, WebEmax certified project completion with 21 new jobs and the retention of 50 employees. As a result, the award was decreased to a $6 million award because of the reduction of jobs. WebEmax maintained its required jobs through 2018 and reported each year with annual tax certificates for the years 2014 to 18, totaling $2.7 million. In response to the Governor Murphy's Executive Order 107, in March mandating that all non-essential employees implement work-from-home arrangements, WebEmax required its employees to work from home. As marketing costs for most businesses are discretionary in nature, and many businesses decided to hold on some of their intended work, and WebEmax had a significant decline in revenues. As a result, the full-time employment decreased to 36. They evaluated options, how to deal with the decrease in operating costs or to decrease operating costs, and determined that it was most important to keep their staff and decided to terminate their lease and agree to vacate the premises in November of 2020. Currently, they have no office in New Jersey or no plans and are working entirely remotely. In January of 21, the ERA was amended to allow GROW participants several relief measures in recognition of the negative effects of COVID-19 pandemic and emergency restrictions and what they had impacted and how they had impacted businesses. To qualify for the relief, a GROW New Jersey business must demonstrate COVID-related impacts to the business and that being the basis of the request for the relief. Specifically, the amended GROW law allows businesses to terminate under the provision, this provision. It would result in a forfeiture of all tax credits in that tax period and subsequent tax periods. But tax credits issued for previous periods would be retained and the business would not have any longer ongoing reporting obligations. To guard against misrepresentation by businesses that these were COVID-related requests, termination letters under this provision would include a provision allowing EDA to seek recapture
should it be determined that the decision was made without consideration of COVID impacts. Because this law is proactive or prospective, prospective, EDA staff developed the policy that the businesses with defaults prior to the enactment of ERA should not be able to avail themselves of the termination. However, if we considered it further, we determined that pre-ERA defaults would be able to be supported for this provision if they were the result of commercially reasonable responses to the impacts that businesses were experiencing. Staff learned that Webmax had terminated its lease when it reached out in early spring to find out more about this ERA COVID-related termination. Vacating a QBS is an event of default under the GROW agreement. In addition, without a QBF, Webmax would not be able to meet its annual jobs obligations for the remainder of the eligibility period and will be subject to partial recapture of previously issued credits for the remaining years in eligibility. So as we started to kind of dig in and review the implications of the lease termination, at that same time, we were also receiving annual reports for the years 19 and 20. There was an extension provided to businesses in response to COVID to allow more time for annual reporting. At that time, we learned that Webmax didn't meet the retained employee number that put them below the threshold necessary and that they would end up forfeiting their 19th tax year. They did not report on their 2020 tax year. Failure to report is also a default under the incentive agreement, which could result in termination. Staff has taken a look at this and reviewed the positioning they were in and the choices made along the way and feel that this was a commercially reasonable response to vacate the property in response to the impacts they were experiencing at the time and feels it would be appropriate to allow Webmax this COVID-related termination. I know that was a lot of facts real fast, so please let me know if you have any questions.
Great. Thank you, Susan. Do we have any questions for Susan?
Yeah, I got one question for Susan, actually. The original amount was for $12 million back in 2013 for 100 jobs created and 50 full-time already. And then a year later, it was reduced down to $6 million because they only hired 21 new people rather than 100. How come it only got reduced by 50%? Instead of realistically, should have been reduced down to 20% of the original $12 million.
Well, they did have the retained employees, and they lessened the new employees. When we see that kind of decrease, we rerun the grant calculator, the net benefit is rerun, and the award is right-sized in accordance with the calculations.
I think the arithmetic here is, Robert, is the new jobs are reduced from whatever to whatever, but there was a bunch of retained jobs that were part of the calculation as well. So those are, that's how you get the...
Yeah, but the retained jobs were the same. They're both 50. Or am I misreading this?
Yeah, just 50.
No, I was going to say, yes, they did maintain all of the 50 jobs that were part of the award. And decreased only the new. So when you're doing the per job calculation, they decreased only on the new bit, and the retained employees they got full credit for.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions for Susan? If we have no other questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Charles Sorla.
Thank you, Charles. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we're moving to film and digital media tax credit. Matt Sestrich, Senior Program Officer, Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Programs presenting. We have, I think, 8 items here that will require... yes, 8 separate votes. Matt?
I'm counting 7, but I think it's 6 film and 1 digital.
Well, thank you, Chairman. The EDA staff has completed the review and recommends the approval of seven programs under the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program, six applications under the Film Tax Credit Program, and one under the Digital Media Tax Credit Program. We have received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets and make sure that each is reasonable for current industry standards. All the film content has also been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the six recommended film approvals is over $47.6 million, with total credits utilized under the digital side is just over $890,000. The first film under consideration is ASATMU, the film Inc., who will produce As Sick As They Made Us. We are recommending an award of $1,194,228.65. This project includes a 2% diversity bonus worth $64,552.90. The second application is The Perfect Movie Production LLC, which will produce The Perfect Find. We are recommending an approval of $5,950,025.13. This project also includes the 2% diversity bonus worth $321,622.98. The third project is Lucky 8 Television, LLC, which is responsible for the production of Empires of Excess. We are recommending an award of $1,114,079.62. This project also includes a 2% diversity bonus worth $60,220.50. The fourth application under consideration today is for ABC Signature NJ LLC, who is the production company responsible for Emergence Season 1. We are recommending an award of $14,037,579.84. This project included a 2% diversity bonus worth $877,348.74. The fifth application is for Pacific 2.1 Entertainment Group, who is responsible for the production of Wu-Tang and American Saga Season 2. We are recommending an award of $21,814,620.20, and this award also includes the 2% diversity bonus, which is worth $1,179,168.66. The final application under the film side is for PS203 New Jersey, Inc., who is responsible for the production of Spinning Gold. We're recommending an award of $3,568,052.45, and this project also includes the 2% diversity bonus worth $192,867.70. The only project today under the digital side the members are asked to approve is Malcolm Media Group, LLC, for its 2019 digital media content. We are recommending an award of $890,904.80. There is no diversity bonus for this project. Each of the above projects would need its own vote. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thanks.
Do we have any questions for Matt? If we have no questions, let's move to voting on these seven items. ASAPMU, the film, tax credits of almost $2 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Noreen Giblin, second. Mark.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Our next item, The Perfect Movie Productions, LLC, a tax credit of almost $6 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Marcia, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, the next item here Here it is. Lucky 8 TV LLC, a tax credit in the amount of $1.114 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon. Noreen Gibbon.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Noreen Gibbon, second.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item is ABC Signature New Jersey LLC, a tax credit in the amount of just over $14 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item, Pacific 2.1 Entertainment Group Incorporated, tax credit in the amount of $21.8 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Roberto,
Elizabeth.
Second, Jenny Bauer.
Thank you, Jenny. You two must be Wu-Tang fans. any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item, the PS203 New Jersey, Inc., tax credits in the amount of just over $3.5 million. Can I get a motion to approve?
Noreen Gibbon, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Roberto Sobrani, second.
Thank you, Roberto. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, our last under film. Now the digital media tax credit, the Malcolm Media Group LLC, tax credits in the amount of just over $890,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bell, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Marcia, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, well, now moving on to the director's loan review portion of our agenda. Marcia Marley is chair of our Director's Loan Review Committee. Would you like to say a few words?
Yes, Chairman. The DLRC committee met on November 23rd, 2021 to review and provide input on several bond projects, including a second amendment and restated bond resolution for Linden Renewable Energy, LLC, and the adoption and implementation of written post-issuance compliance procedures for the authority's motor vehicle surcharge subordinate revenue refunding bonds that include 2017 Series A and any refunding bonds issued pursuant to the resolution. Chairman, these projects are now before the full board for approval, and I thank the staff for their thorough presentation to the committee. I now turn it back to you.
Great. Thank you, Marcia. So we're moving on to our first item here, which is the Linden Renewable Energy, LLC, the second amended and restated bond resolution. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The members are requested to approve a second amended and restated bond resolution for Linden Renewable Energy, LLC. This resolution will renew the authority's $214 million volume cap allocation for the issuance of bonds and grant the applicant a new 60-day period with an additional 30-day extension to close on the approved project. The second amendment is necessary because the applicant does not have direct access to a public road, which has delayed development, Instead, the applicant can only access the public road by traveling from the project along a private road. Linden is in the process of negotiating an access easement over the private road, as well as an easement to construct a wastewater pipeline to the local utility. The applicant remains committed to closing on the bonds and completing the project and has incurred approximately $11 million in project costs to date. Linden expects these issues to be resolved this month, marketing of the bonds to begin in mid-January of next year and closing in mid-February of 22. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David? If there's no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, the next item on the agenda is adoption of written post-issuance compliance procedures with respect to the authority's motor vehicle surcharges subordinate revenue refunding bonds, 2017 Series A. Lori Zagarella, Program Manager, Bond Compliance, presenting. Lori.
Good morning and thank you. This request is to adopt written post-issuance compliance procedures with respect to the 2017 Series A tax-exempt $549 million NJEDA Motor Vehicle Surcharge Subordinate Revenue Refunding Bonds. The request also asks to approve the use of professionals and authorize authority staff to take all necessary actions incidental to the request. This request is made in coordination with and direction from the New Jersey State Treasurer and the Attorney General's Office and reviewed by Bond Counsel CS&G PC. As required pursuant to IRS requirements and in accordance with the tax certificate, the authority has been undertaking arbitrage compliance with respect to the bonds, and the state treasurer or his or her designee has been monitoring available amounts of the 2017 series bonds since the time of issuance. The authority now wishes to memorialize these ongoing tax compliance procedures as described in the written procedures attached. The authority, in consultation with bond counsel, will supplement and update these procedures as appropriate to provide a continuing source of guidance on these requirements. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Lori. Any questions for Lori? If we have no questions for Lori, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bell, my second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item on the agenda, loans, guarantees, and grants. This is a summary of the NJDEP Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Fund Program projects approved by the Department of Environmental Protection. David Lawyer, Managing Director, presenting. David.
Thank you. Under DEP's Hazardous Discharge Site Remediation Program, we have two municipal applications seeking approval. The first is a supplemental grant to National Park Borough in the amount of $2.33 million. The proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with remedial action at a former landfill which has potential environmental areas of concern. It is the applicant's intent upon full site remediation to develop and install a renewable energy solar power generation system. The second request is a supplemental grant to Edison Township in the amount of $1.05 million. The proceeds will be used to fund costs associated with remedial action at a former landfill, which also has potential environmental areas of concern. It is the applicant's intent upon full site remediation to redevelop the site for public open space and recreational use. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David? There's no questions for David. Can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Next item on the agenda, summary of NJDEP Petroleum UST Remediation Upgrade and Closure Fund Program, projects approved by the Department of Environmental Protection. David, please continue.
Under DEP's PUSD program, we have one commercial application seeking approval. Board approval is required as the requested amount exceeds EDA staff's $100,000 delegation. This supplemental request is from Curtin's Service Center, Inc., in the amount of $124,239. The applicant is a former gas station located in Passaic City. The proceeds will be used to complete additional groundwater and soil remediation at the site. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, David. Any questions for David? Can I get a motion to approve?
Elizabeth Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Before moving to the real estate committee report, I just want to share with the board some feedback I'm getting from staff. They when we are taking votes, for example, on that last one, we only had, if I included myself, I believe four verbalized ayes. We want to make sure that we are capturing everybody's participation in these important votes and matters. So please, when asking for a vote, please take yourself off mute and say aye. Thank you. Moving to the real estate. Yes.
It's Jenny. Just a question. I think I know the answer. If you move the motion, that's considered an aye vote. Is that correct?
It would be better to have everybody vocalized. But
okay.
Yes, if you're moving it, presumably you're also voting for it.
And that's what, okay, because there's times I haven't piped up with the eye. I say enough with the motions. Okay,
just for the public benefit, we do have a monitor from AT&T that shows who's on. So we do know which board members are called in, but it is helpful to be able to hear everybody.
Okay, thanks.
Great, thank you. And Jenny, thank you for your always diligent participation in our board meeting.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I am moving now to the real estate committee report. Charles Sarlo, our chair. Charles, would you like to say a few words in advance of the real estate projects before us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Real Estate Committee met on November 23rd, 2021. We had the full members of the Real Estate Committee present to participate, as well as with the typical staff of the EDA. Again, on behalf of the Real Estate Committee, we thank the staff for the comprehensive memorandums that were put in front of us and the discussion. The first item that was discussed is an investment in Downtown Hub Associates, LLC. I had recused myself from that discussion, and I will recuse myself in the matter before this board today, so I won't talk anything further in that regard. The second item was the New Jersey Bioscience Center for an amendment to a lease agreement for MIR, and this is to modify and extend the lease dates related to certain termination options subject to the approval of the Attorney General's office. The next item that was discussed was the award of title services that was subject to a RFP to approve title services on an as-needed basis for 3 years with 2 one-year extensions. And then yesterday, Real Estate Committee reconvened to discuss a New Jersey Windport matter related to easements that will be discussed in executive session, so I will not get into the specifics in terms of the matters that was discussed. Thank you, Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Charles. So the next item on our agenda is the investment in the Downtown Hub Associates, LLC. Before introducing our presenters, I want to share with everyone on the call that we've received two letters to the EDA board. The EDA board has reviewed both these letters, one from Charlie Cradiville on behalf of the 5th and 6th Ward Neighborhood Association of New Brunswick, and another from State Senator Bob Smith's law firm, who's representing the New Jersey Planning Board, in a letter that was addressed to the New Brunswick Planning Board, a letter that was addressed to the New Brunswick Planning Board. So just for the record, I want to share that the board has reviewed both of those letters. This investment on behalf of the EDA and the Downtown Hub Associates LLC, we have Kathleen Coviello, EVP Economic Growth Products, and David Noose, EVP Real Estate and Community Development, presenting. Kathleen.
Great. Good morning, Chairman and Board. Thank you. So the Board might recall back in July of 2021, the members approved an initiative around strategic innovation centers, and it was how the authority was going to use $55 million that was appropriated to the EDA through the fiscal year 22 budget. And the focus was around place-based economic development. This project before you today is the second project for consideration under this use of the Strategic Innovation Centers. The first project, you might recall, was a $25 million investment into HACT LLC to bring a hard tech accelerator to New Jersey. The project today is in a similar structure, in that we are requesting a $10 million investment into a newly formed LLC called Downtown Hub Associates. The LLC members will be the New Jersey Economic Development Authority and the New Brunswick Development Corporation, also known as DevCo. As I mentioned, the entity will be called Downtown Hub Associates, and the purpose will be in creating a innovation, place-based innovation center in New Brunswick, New Jersey. The board is being asked to consider this $10 million investment in the LLC, to grant delegated authority to our CEO to sign the associated documents, several of which are attached to the memo that you have, and also to implement a policy and approve a policy around administrative fees associated with strategic innovation centers. We're asking, because of the close proximity and timing, for approval retroactive on the HACS LLC and for the fee associated today with Downtown Hub Associates, both at 4.5%. A little bit of background and information on this request and the Strategic Innovation Center and why we believe this fits within the legislative allocation and board approval of this initiative. The investment today is for phase one of a multi-phase engagement between NJEDA and DevCo on this transformative project. The funding will be used as seed catalyst for phase one of the Innovation Hub project, specifically for the land acquisition at $6 million and related design and site preparation related to the project at $4 million. The goal of this early seed catalyst funding of $10 million is ultimately to advance the building that will stand on the land as the Innovation Hub. Phase two will include a future request to this board for EDA space within the physical building, the Innovation Hub, and for consideration of the EDA to become a core partner. But again, we'll consider that in the next phase of the project. This is the catalytic phase of getting the ground ready to construct a building. The hub is focused keenly on creating this coalition of strategic partners that will help advance innovation in the state of New Jersey. The core partners already identified who will be occupants within the building include Rutgers University, Hackensack Meridian Health, RWJ Barnabas. The Innovation Hub will be designed with this core partner space of the space of partners I just spoke about, as well as collaborative office space and workspace, digital health space, clean energy space, biotech startup space, wet and dry lab, and conference facilities, all to engage the collaboration amongst these different entities. The top floors of the building will also have Rutgers Translational Research. The package includes renderings. We had shared in more detail with the committees the floor plans and the engagement opportunities based on the design of this building, mirroring other sites, such innovation hubs that we've seen in Boston and in California. There will be a program manager who will be hired by our partner in the LLC, DevCo, and approved by the core partners. The program manager will be charged with facilitating the collaboration and programmatic efforts within the building to increase innovation and new ecosystem building opportunities. With that said, I'm going to turn over the next part of the discussion to my colleague, Dave News, who will talk more about the real estate part of the transaction. Dave, to you.
Great, Kathleen. Thank you, Kathleen, and good morning, everyone. The property totals just under 1 acre of land across from the New Brunswick train station. It's the former site of the New Brunswick Parking Authority's Ferron Deck, which DevCo has demolished at a cost of $3.2 million. DevCo has exercised an option to acquire the property from the Parking Authority at appraised value, less the demolition costs. The project's real estate structure calls for DevCo and EDA to form a limited liability company to acquire and own the property. The authority will invest a total of $10 million into the LLC through the Strategic Innovation Center Initiative, $6 million to fund acquisition of the hub site from the Parking Authority, and $4 million for building design, site preparation, and related project costs. In return for its investment, the authority will take a 50% ownership stake in the LLC, receive a mortgage on the property, and recoup its investment to a credit against our future base rent obligations as a hub tenant. The LLC, to be known as Hub Associates, will then ground lease the property at nominal rent to DevCo's special purpose entity, NJ Innovation LLC, that will finance and build the project. The ground lease will provide that upon completion of construction, Hub Associates will convey the land to NJ Innovation via deed, a long-term ground lease for $1. At the end of the core tenant's 30-year leases, NJ Innovation will condo the building and convey units to NJEDA and the other core tenants for nominal consideration. Staff has successfully completed its due diligence on the property and the project, which included financial and legal reviews on DevCo. As part of that process, staff has requested that DevCo indemnify EDA against any environmental remediation costs that exceed the project budget, and DevCo has agreed to do so. In addition to DevCo's request for land acquisition and related funding through the Strategic Innovation Center's initiative, staff will be conducting a separate review of DevCo's application for tax incentives under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. We anticipate bringing a recommendation for potential incentives and a request to lease space in the hub building to a future meeting. Staff is requesting that approval of the LLC's operating agreement and the Strategic Innovation Center funding move forward prior to full project approval, as Kathleen indicated, so that it can serve as an early investment to advance the project. Thank you. Happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Kathleen and David? If we have no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Robert Shimko, approve.
Karina.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get? Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 There we go. Nice job. Any opposed? I know Charles Sarlo is recusing himself. Do we have any other recusals or abstentions on this vote? All right. Let's move to the next item on the agenda, the New Jersey Bioscience Center. 685 U.S. Highway 1 South Building, MIR Scientific, LLC, First Amendment to the Lease Agreement. Juan Burgos, Director, Real Estate Development and Finance, presenting. Juan.
Good morning. We're requesting that the members approve the first amendment to the lease with MRI Scientific LLC, which will extend the early lease termination option by 3 months for complying with certifying the lab space for CLIA use. The members must approve this amendment because the delegated authority does not exist to permit staff to authorize the amendment. In May 2021, the members approved executing a 63-month lease with MIR for 14,662 square feet. And the lease was executed on June 16th, and NEAR undertook and completed the planned reservations in the summer of 2021. The lease includes an early termination option and penalty payment in the event that NEAR is unable to obtain CLIA certification approval for its lab. Currently under the lease, NEAR was required to provide the certification and approval by December 1st of this year. NEAR has informed the authority that it submitted its application in August 2021. To obtain the CLIA certification, the Department of Health has to complete an inspection of the labs, and NEAR must perform complete proficiency testing in the laboratory environment. NEAR encountered equipment calibration issues due to humidity, which delayed the required proficiency testing. NEAR has now addressed this issue by purchasing the dehumidifier system and plans to schedule a reinspection in January 22. NEAR has requested an extension of the early termination option from December 1st, the notice date from December 1st to March 1st, and the actual termination date would be from January 30th to April 30th, 2022. In addition, the lease would be amended to make minor modifications to be consistent with that request. Are there any questions?
Questions for Juan? If we have no questions for Juan, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Charles Sarlo.
Thank you, Charles.
I'll
can I get a second? Thank you, Jenny.
I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, recommendation for award. 2021 RFP 78, a rebid title services on an as-needed basis. Juan Burgos, continuing to present. Juan.
Thank you. We're asking the members to approve an as-needed title services contract for an initial term of 3 years with discretionary one-year extensions for two times with Stewart Title Company for an amount not to exceed $500,000. These services will assist the authority, real estate division, and other programs in analyzing real estate property information and, if necessary, procuring title policies and performing closings. These services were bid twice by internal process management, in April 2021, and no responsive bids were obtained, and then again in July 2021 with two responses obtained, one by CW Solutions and the other by Stewart Title Company. CW Solutions was deemed non-responsive for altering the fee schedule and not submitting the fee schedule with the bid, and Stewart Title was selected as the responsive bidder. So we're requesting that the members approve the title services contract for 3 years with two discretionary 2 1-year extensions with Stewart Title Services for an amount not to exceed $500,000.
Great. Thank you, Juan. Do we have any questions for Juan? If there's no questions for Juan, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, board memoranda. Tim Sullivan, CEO, presenting. There's no votes here. Tim.
I'll be real brief in the spirit of still having some executive session to get through here. Only one delegated authority memo in your pack this month. It's for credit underwriting projects. There's two premier lender program approvals that were made. Happy to answer any questions on that or anything else. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Tim. We'll now move to the public comment portion of the agenda. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser, Director of Governance, to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on your phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. We'll go over the public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce either her name, organizational affiliation, the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not address the board more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time available for all of those who wish to speak. And speakers may also provide written documents, printed comments, materials attached to an email. Thank you. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. Once again, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment for our first question. And our first question is from Charlie Cartavelle. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, members of the board. Can you hear me?
Yes, Charlie, we can hear you.
Okay, good morning. I want to start by thanking Mr. Jorge Santos for reaching out and hearing me out and encouraging me to put some of my concerns in writing. I appreciate the board looking at that regarding the New Brunswick Development Corporation. Just to reiterate, I am currently the leader of the 5th and 6th Ward Neighborhood Association here in New Brunswick. This is an area that has seen some major changes over my time in the city, a lot of it stemming directly from developments by this developer. I've itemized in my letter to you some of the concerns about recent projects, including their partnership with Rutgers and Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas. They kept a secret from May 2019 to February of 2020, but ultimately did move forward with plans that displaced over 700 young public school students. Those students are currently attending classes in a warehouse building rented by the school district. And the plans for a replacement school leave a lot to be desired. And I understand that one of the board members is involved with that, and that's why they had to recuse. I just want the board to learn from the past, in particular the Wellness Plaza project where DevCo got all sorts of subsidies to build, first and foremost, a full-service supermarket for the community. I'm intimately familiar with the project. I even got a $9 an hour job working at that supermarket for its first run, and it failed us miserably and left the parking authority holding the bag. The space is vacant today. There is no supermarket. Those hundreds of jobs vanished. And I just want a clear plan before anything is done at this site, such a crucial piece of real estate. I appreciate the thorough presentation that your staff gave, but I still have some questions. Maybe you can help me understand what role, if any, the New Brunswick Parking Authority will play in the project. Are they just giving the land or selling the land? Or is there going to be any parking component to the project? As you might have seen in my letter, I'm concerned that the type of development that was done with Wellness was not at all transit-oriented. It was kind of the opposite. Can anybody tell me if there's going to be a parking component to this new project or if it will all rely on the Wellness deck to support it?
Hey, Charlie, it's Tim. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for your comments and questions. A couple things. So, yeah, one of the things that was noted in your letter, which is a very fair comment, was that this hasn't been through planning yet in town, in New Brunswick, and it will be in the early part of 22, where, you know, parking and transit orientation, if that's a word, is going to be discussed. I think the plans for this are to tie in a big way to the train station. I think one of the value propositions that we're talking about with tenants is the fact that this is essentially at the New Brunswick train station, which has some service on the Amtrak corridor and great service on the New Jersey Transit corridor to New York and down to Philly, by extension through Trenton. And so tying this into transit is for sure important. Dave or Kathleen, may want to comment on the parking authority's role. I don't think the plans for phase one of the building involve the construction of parking per se here. But again, that'll be probably more discussed in more detail at the planning board. I'm getting the vocabulary wrong, but the planning board, the planning and zoning process in the new year. Dave or Kathleen, you want to help me out on the parking authority? Please.
Sure, Tim. This is Dave Noose. Parking authority's role, as you indicated, is simply to convey the property to DevCo, to the LLC that will build the project. So my understanding is that they will not be playing an active role going forward. And as you mentioned, Tim, the location of the project directly across from the New Brunswick train station is key, and that would be the transportation resource for the project.
And I would just add, there is expected to actually be a bridge from the building to NJ to the rail line.
Well, thank you for the thorough answers. And we have been waiting for that bridge for over a decade now. I do hope it comes to pass. But I just want to close by thanking the EDA for, again, hearing me out and for agreeing to meet with myself and members of our organization to discuss the impact of the projects you've sponsored and this project as well on our neighborhood. So I do appreciate the dialogue and look forward to continuing it. Thank you for answering my questions today.
Same here, Charlie. Looking forward to seeing you next week or week after, whenever that's set for. Looking forward to it.
Excuse me, and thank you. Again, if you do have a question, please press a 1, then 0. And at this time, there are no further questions in queue.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. The board's now going to go into executive session. I'll make a motion to enter executive session to discuss the closing tax agreement for an NJEDA applicant, settlement on fees for an NJEDA tenant, and a real estate project under negotiations where the information is confidential under federal law, and where disclosure could adversely impact the public interest, the minutes of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. The vote will take place after the board returns to public session. Operator, if we can now proceed to executive session.
Sorry, can we have the vote, the second and vote on the motion?
Oh, can I get a second to go into executive session?
Caridi seconds.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Now if we get into our executive session.
Thank you. In one moment, please.
Is that Elizabeth?
Yes.
Yep.
Thank you. Chairman, we are back in the public session. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your patience. We have two items to vote on in public session. There'll be no discussion of these items as they were discussed in executive session. Item 1, Friends of Central Jersey Arts Charter School Incorporated. Can I get a motion to consent to the execution of the closing agreement as discussed in executive session?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Elizabeth Jordan, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth and Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item, New Jersey Windport, request to approve road access easement, temporary use agreements, and extension of letter of intent with PSNG Nuclear. Can I get a motion to approve the authority entering into a road access easement agreement, temporary use agreements, and approval of the PSNG letter of intent extension, as discussed in executive session? Can I get a motion, please?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Jennifer Keys Maloney, second.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Elizabeth Dragon, abstaining, was not in executive session for this matter.
Great. Thank you, Elizabeth. If there's no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation, and now we'll make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Second.
Monday second.
Bauer,
I'll second. Thank you, Marcia. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. You all have a wonderful holiday season. This concludes our meeting.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation in the conferencing service. You may now disconnect.